Ausschnitte aus dem erregenden, spannenden und aktuellen Kriminalfilm M, den der Regisseur Fritz Lang für die Nero-Produktion geschaffen hat. Die Handlung dieses einzigartigen Kriminalfilms ist von atemberaubender Explosivität. Spannungsgeladen von Anfang bis Ende.
Hallo, was hast du denn? Hallo, Paule! Antworte doch mal! Was ist denn? Ich hab was trotzdem gehört! Was habe ich euch denn gesagt? Meine Loslassen! Meine
Das Resultat, bitte! Das Resultat!
Ich komme nämlich vom Finanzamt.
Wer ist der geheimnisvolle Unbekannte, der Millionen Menschen einer Stadt terrorisiert? Wo verbirgt er sich? Wie sieht er aus? Wer ist der Mörder? Jeder kann es sein. Jeder ist verdächtig.
Du bist wohl verrückt, du Schweinsknall!
M. Das Meisterwerk auf dem Gebiet des Kriminalfilms mit Otto Wernicke.
Hören Sie mal bloß auf, von der Mitarbeit des Publikums.
Gustav Gründgens.
Meine Herren, wenn sich mir bei Ausübung meines Berufs ein Kriminalbeamter in den Weg stellt, dann weiß er, welches Risiko er eingeht. Und ich weiß es auch.
Theodor Loos.
Lassen Sie mal einen Wächter reinkommen.
Theo Lingen. Paul Kemp. Fritz Odemar.
Ist denn schon 3 Uhr?
Peter Lorre. Rosa Valetti.
Was glauben Sie, was die hier alle für eine Stinkwut auf den Kerl haben?
Friedrich Gnas.
Mann, meinte? Ich weiß von nichts, Herr Kommissar.
M. Ein Film, den jeder gesehen haben muss. Wir zeigen diesen spannenden Kriminalfilm demnächst in diesem Theater.
Hello.
Hi.
Welcome to Movie Humpers. Does my camera look okay? Oh, let me shift
I'm
it.
I'm so much closer than you.
It's fine. It looks like we're in...
It looks like my head is bigger than yours.
Hi, I'm Bob Sham.
I'm Angela.
And welcome to Movie Humpers. All month long, we're diving deep into classic film noir.
Yup.
It's a theme I call the left-hand endeavor. And our image that we use for it is from Out of the Past, one of my favorite classic noir. But we discussed that movie a long time ago. But if you look at the playlists on our YouTube channel, you can just go to the Left Hand Endeavor and see all the film noir we've discussed so far. Every Thursday, we're talking about foreign, or at least noir from a non-English speaking country.
Yes.
And this is the oldest, maybe the most influential movie we're going to discuss all month long. This movie is called from 1931. It's directed by Fritz Lang. Good old Fritz Lang. He directed Metropolis, many German movies. To talk about the movie M and Fritz Lang and its star, Peter Lorre, is to talk about the climate of the time in Germany in 1931.
Yeah.
We're at the end of the Weimar era of Germany, the post-First World War era of Germany, and... At the time, Fritz Lang had discovered that his studio head had joined the Nazi party in 1931, and he ended up, and he was always, a lot of people interpret a lot of Fritz Lang's works, especially into the 30s, as critiques of growing fascism, and rightfully so. It seemed like they always had their eye on him.
Sure.
But he would always kind of like talk them down when they were like asking a lot of questions.
Mm-hmm.
He actually co-wrote with,
stop it.
With his wife at the time, Thea von Harboim. But when Fritz Lang was offered the position of the head of the studio, he made under a different studio. Under Nero Film, when the Nazi party took power in 1933, the propaganda minister, Goebbels, offered Fritz Lang to be the head of the studio that he did do some work for And he took that as a sign that he needed to get the fuck out of Germany.
Well, yeah, and good.
So by the midsummer of the 1933, he was fully out of Germany. But his wife, who co-wrote with him, Thea von Harbou, she stayed. She actually did film work for Nazi propaganda. One thing that's interesting about her, though, is that she married a man from India who lived in Germany in a private ceremony because under the fascist regime, they were not allowed to get married. But they got married in secret, but shit got so bad that he was forced out of the country by the end of the 30s. So they kind of amicably split. But she's an interesting character in that she just kind of maintained her status.
How did that? So she was married to Fritz Lang and then he left and they divorced?
They divorced.
And then she married a man from India.
Like a secret ceremony. It wasn't officially recognized by the German regime at the time.
That's interesting, though, that they split and she chose to stay and essentially work for the Nazis.
She's, yeah, pretty much. I mean, if you're going to stay in an industry under, especially one that's making film and the government is controlled by a fascist government that won't even let you get married to the man you love, but
right,
like either you leave or you're working for them.
Unless that man was already there and she was already in love with him and she needed to stay in that country to be with him. But they should have gone to India. It's very smart of Fritz because, like you said, if he had stayed, he would have been under their thumb. He'd said, yes, I'll be the head of your film company, they would have dictated every movie made
absolutely
forever.
He didn't want to make movies under that. So that's why he took off, because
they wanted to control him.
If he turned the job down, then he's going to get the red triangle.
Yep.
Probably get thrown in a prison.
He's going to be an enemy, so he just snuck out.
And
good for him.
And, of course, Peter Lorre, he took off as well.
It was so interesting to watch Peter Lorre on screen as a live-action human because I have never seen him not in a Looney Tunes cartoon.
Yeah.
They make me laugh.
Yeah, he's often
parodied. Only way I've ever seen him before.
You hear him scream a lot. You see him more manic, more animated. I feel like when he shows up in as his characters in a lot of American movies, it's like this. It's like more reserved.
Yeah.
And he picked up on the English language quickly, but he learned it phonetically at first. I think in his first English starring role, I forget what movie that was, he just pronounced the words phonetically. Like, I don't think he knew everything that he was saying.
That's hilarious.
But he was a good enough actor to kind of pull it off. And yeah, so
you can learn that way too.
So Peter Lorre would take off and come to the U.S. too. And what's funny is that when Fritz Lang arrived, I mean, we'll get more into him here and the historical nature of it. But when Fritz arrived, he wanted to make a specific, I wish I could remember all these names of the titles, but he wanted to, I think it was called The Fray or something. He wanted to make a movie about, racism in the United States.
Oh, wow.
Because he was under looming censorship in Nazi Germany, but he comes to the United States and the studios are like, no, we're not going to like show anything talking about lynching or anything like that. And a lot of Fritz's movies were some of the earliest movies to thoroughly condemn the Nazi party in American cinema. His later works definitely dictate that Fritz was very much against the Nazi party. And I think the Nazi party suspected that in his works. And that's why they were kind of, that job offer was an ultimatum, ultimately.
Well, yeah, because you want to control him, and if you can't control him, you're going to have to get rid of him.
Now, when the world, you know, M came out in 1931 in Germany into the greater world in 1933.
Mm-hmm.
And when everyone watched it, it was, to put a historical context to what you're viewing, this is 1931, right? We're crawling out of the silent film era. I think the first talkie was in 27. Mm-hmm. But up until this movie, this movie seems so deliberate, like the notion of tracking shots. This is the first movie that has prolonged tracking shots, right? This is also the movie that utilizes in a feature film the idea of, I forget what they call it, but like a song association. Oh, I got it pulled up here. Leitmotif. Mm. And it's when there's a song association directed specifically as a, to a character. So yeah. You hear him whistle in the Hall of the Mountain King. And even when you hear that whistling off screen, you know he is nearby. That signifies that. And prior to this, it was something that would be signified in like an opera or a musical or a play.
Yeah, totally. But not movies because you couldn't hear them.
Yeah. So those two things are firsts in feature film cinema. And just the most thoughtful and deliberate filmmaking shots. It's so meticulous. It almost feels so German in that. Yeah. And it's like, it's almost like a, maybe in his early days, almost as like a Kubrick-like figure.
Yes.
He probably couldn't have done as many reshoots as Kubrick got away with.
Yeah.
But like everything just feels so specific.
It does. And you actually said something about it when it happened, where they seemingly start outside the building and without stopping go through a window yeah. and into the building. One of the shots that I think was more experimental, and it did make me feel very gross, and maybe that was the point, was there is a shot of this man,
the man sitting,
and it's like from his feet up, but it's yeah. like you can see it's like total like his junk, you see his and like bulge. It's all like squished. Yeah. What's that called? It's not a, it's a horse knuckle. There's
moose
something
knuckle.
Moose knuckle. It's not called a camel toe. That's ladies.
Yeah. It depends on how it folds out. Like the balls could be over here, and then.
But it was just weird. There was something very weird happening with that man's crotch, and I was like,
"It was a weirdly
should have been reshot that one."
Such a grotesque little shot.
But maybe he wanted me to feel gross, and that's fine if that was the case. Success.
And of course, there's no. This movie is about a serial killer.
Yeah, the worst kind. Again, I feel as though we've been watching way too many movies where someone is hurting children lately.
And a lot of it
would like a break.
Of course, it happens off screen.
Thank goodness.
Which just lends it more to the imagination, doesn't it?
But that is, yes. And that's, again, the most awful part is you know a child is dead because a ball rolls across the grass and a balloon gets caught in some, like, overhead cabling.
And this is long before the term serial killer was really out there, but it seems to evoke the questions in terms of crime and punishment surrounding that, mm-hmm. that you maybe were more popularized later on. There's just a lot about this movie that is so way ahead of its time.
Yeah.
And in some ways it may seem so meticulous that it kind of drags a bit, but the visuals and the way the cultures and subcultures in society, like, so the police want to find this guy and they don't know, like who he is or where he is.
I think at this point, 8 children have gone missing and been found murdered.
And we see one child get killed when he buys a balloon off a blind man's cart.
And he's whistling.
Yeah. In the Hall of the Mountain King.
While he's buying the balloon. And then that's the little girl where we see her ball roll. And it's, the shot where when he approaches her, she's tossing her ball against a wanted poster, talking about how children are being abducted.
It's creepy. Super creepy.
And you don't see his face for a bit, too. Mm. And when you do see his face, it's in like a montage of people talking about him. It's very creepy.
Yeah. Apparently this character is based on multiple serial murderers at the time. The character's name is Hans Beckert.
Mm-hmm.
But many assume it was a specific guy from the 20s, but it might have been like an amalgamation of a lot.
Sure.
Interesting that at this time, like the most notable serial killers that we know of were coming out of Germany in Europe at this time. But at this time, you could also like murder 70 people and then no one will know for 30 years and then you're like famous, right?
Sure, absolutely. And I think in this case, that's why if just a person goes missing, you can kind of make an adult, you can kind of make excuses, right? Like, oh, well, she ran away, her husband was mean, or like he's just a drunk, he just disappeared, you know, and not that that's okay. But back then it was much easier to be like, well, maybe they just moved on. Just forget about it. If you don't find a body, but these are children.
So the police are desperate because there's a lot of bodies and everyone's mad. So the police crack down on all crime, almost going a little too hard in directions.
Definitely too hard.
That aren't going to lead to rustling up this murderer because
they're just taking everybody in every night from every dance hall.
Because the reality is that other than just killing kids, this guy is a normal person or appears to be normal in any other aspect of society.
And
he's not like some seasoned burglar.
Someone tries to tell them that and they're like, we just have to do everything we can.
Yeah.
We don't know what else to do. We're trying to catch everybody. And it's like, no, this guy looks like anyone else. He's not going to go to these like seedy bars and after hours club hangs that you are searching all these people. He's going to be like at home sleeping until he goes out in the afternoon tomorrow.
This movie is also the earliest, as far as I know, the earliest film representation of thumbprints and handwriting analysis.
Interesting.
I think it was kind of a fairly new thing at this time.
Yes, and I actually really liked that scene because he writes a letter to the newspaper basically saying, I already tried to send a letter to the police, but y'all didn't do anything with it, so I'm sending this to the newspaper. And he writes it in a red pen on a rough surface, but they are talking like about like the way that he's pencil. It looks like a crayon to me. Yeah. Maybe one of those grease pencils, but the man is analyzing his handwriting. And I thought it was so interesting because before you could scan fingerprints, like they are looking at fingerprints, but it was like this big projector.
Yeah.
Huge fingerprint.
Yeah.
With like little arrows at different places. You had to really like zoom in and try to pick out like what were the tiny little differences. Like that's insane.
Right. So the criminal underworld is feeling a little,
pissed
off, and the criminal and the criminal underworld is actually like there's somewhat cultural accuracy to the organized function of a criminal underworld. It's based on this group in Berlin called the Ringverein, which is it's kind of like the mafia, but like almost like very working class, and they almost have their own ways of self-policing, almost like this subculture kind of connects to everyday society.
Sure.
That encompasses crooks. The police do figure out who it is, and the police finally are able to track down a note that he wrote his note on the sill. So for about half the movie, they're chasing him, and he's hiding out in this building.
Mm-hmm.
And also, the Ringverein, this criminal group, they know that he's in this building because they tortured some security guard.
Well, yes, but it's actually more brilliant than that. So the policemen have figured out they figured out where he lives.
Yeah.
And they're just sitting in his apartment waiting for him. What happens is the group, the circle guys, they have their own like code of conduct, right? Like there's like an honor system. And they are working with the bums of the neighborhood.
Right.
And they have them all lookout. And so Beckert gets another girl and goes to the balloon man to buy her a balloon. And he hears the whistling, or he just hears the whistling. He's maybe not buying a balloon, but he goes to one of the guys who can see because he's a blind man. He goes to one of the guys who can see and he's like, that man,
that's the guy.
And that dude chases him until he can write the M in chalk on his palm.
Right.
And then he like pretends to run into the man and like palms him. So there's an M on his shoulder.
He's marked.
And so then he's being chased by a gang of
crooks.
Yeah, but at first it's just
it
like
could be like everyone really. Folks. Yeah.
Yeah, these homeless guys on the street. And then they send one to go tell the safecracker, who's kind of the ringleader, and he's dressed up like a policeman because he gets in the gate.
Yeah.
Because they're like, we know he's in this office building. We watched him go in before they closed up the gates. And so then that's when the mafia guys come and the gangster guys.
They trash the place trying to get to this guy.
They really do. And he's like hiding in this like attic room.
And there's all sorts of tense scenes where he's almost getting nabbed and he takes off and the way the cameras are cutting back and forth. And police also bust them. A lot of them fuck off. But one guy is left after they've like popped a hole right into this area.
Mm-hmm.
And they catch, in a nice shot, they catch him crawling out of the hole.
I like that guy.
And they think that they were just trying to rob the building. Like
but they didn't take anything.
But no. Then the guy's like, no, we're not trying to rob anything. We're trying to find the fucking killer.
Because they, when they had that meeting at the beginning, they were like, people think it's us or someone related to us. And we need to prove that it's not. And also, this guy is ruining our business because everywhere we would be making money, the police are busting every every like hangout, hideout.
Well, yeah, and the gangsters do capture him and take him to this underground. I don't know where they are, but
this was amazing.
And that shot, that tracking panning shot, basically the neighborhood, this whole criminal underworld, they're all just staring at him.
But also just people. There's like townspeople, mothers who've lost their children, families who have lost their children are there. It's like hundreds of people, and it's seemingly in the basement of a building. The guy does tell the cops where they are because he doesn't want to be in trouble. They told him, they got into talk by telling him that they'd killed one of the security guys. So he like fessed up. There's a very long scene though in that basement area where he's trying to beg for his life.
They give him a defense attorney.
Yeah, they're like, we're going to put you on trial.
He does try.
He does try. He argues that you can't lock up someone who's insane. Peter Lorre, his character, says, I can't help doing this.
Essentially, he's like, I'm driven to do this. I don't know why. It's just a
sickness
in
my
head. He also
tries to say he can't remember it when it's happening, that he like blacks out.
And he's like, you all choose to break your laws, and sometimes I just find myself doing these things.
But it's not true, because those letters are premeditation.
Yeah.
He says in those letters, I'm going to do it again.
Yeah.
And I mean, he knows he's going to do it again, but it's also like,
I guess he means his drive, but he also told a story about how when he first started doing it, it just was like it was just happening.
Yeah, like he would just kind of wake up from it and not realize what had been done. But so they're like, we don't give a fuck.
The lawyer is positing kind of a philosophical long crime question. It's like, if this guy is really compulsed to do this, that means that his actions are beyond his control. He deserves to be maybe in a mental institution, but maybe not executed. And of course, the crowd's like, no, we want to kill this motherfucker.
And they try to argue that the safecracker has three dead bodies that he's wanted
and
for.
He's like, no,
that's
not
the same.
Not
and it's not
that.
The same. It's not the fucking same. You know, he's a criminal who probably killed some guys who got in his way. I'm not saying that that's okay, but he killed adults.
You sound like you're in the Ring of Orion. Ring of Orion.
I can understand more if you are in a crime syndicate. People might get hurt sometimes, but they're adults who are also capable of defending themselves and might also kill you, right? But these are children, and it's like that thing of, it just kept making me think about the debate of, if someone is a pedophile, but they have never done anything to a child, what do you do with them? Because if they confess to you that this is how they feel, should they be locked up? Because they haven't done anything yet. But the thing is, this guy did the thing.
Yeah.
He's killing the children. So I don't care if he can help it or not. The first time he thought he wanted to kill a child, he should have killed himself.
Well, you're coming out like hard here.
You're gonna kill people? If you're gonna actually...
No, I'm not gonna kill people.
Actually kill... Yeah. Another person compulsively?
It's horrid.
Turn that shit back on yourself, bro.
Yeah, that's true. Like, have the courage to just...
And I do not think... I'm not advocating self-harm, anything like that. But it's just one of those things...
Clarify
that. Well, I'm just saying, I don't want anyone to take their own life. I don't want anyone to be a victim of suicide. But at the same time...
If you're
going to hurt people...
If you're compulsively trying to hurt people.
And that's the only way to stop yourself, or turn yourself in, or check yourself into a mental hospital. But the time for that has passed because 8 children are dead.
Wow.
So fucking kill him.
I feel like we're talking about like a true crime documentary.
I mean.
The passion you're bringing to this. Thoughts. This movie still gets him roiling all these years later.
And also, he's just so... smarmy, slimy. Oh. No, he's gross.
No, he's cute. Oh, he's a little cutie
pie. He's a little toad man.
Oh, Peter Lorre. Yeah, they always drew him like that. While the great debate in this, our little podcast studio and in the movie goes on, we hear silence, and that means the police came in, and then we see a hand on his shoulder. And I like that they didn't explicitly show the police. And there's other parts too, where when the criminal organization is getting together, like it's totally quiet. Like there's not like, like in later talkies when there's more symphonic, a lot of orchestra stuff.
Yeah.
He chooses to make a lot of like busy scenes be completely quiet.
And then all of a sudden there will be like an alarm and it's jarring.
Yeah, yeah.
It's really good.
It's actually a really nice touch.
I did love the way this movie ended because he's in court, but you just get a picture of these three grieving mothers. And Elsie, the girl we actually meet at the very beginning, her mother says,
"Davon werden unsere Kinder auch nicht wieder lebendig."
None of this is going to bring our children back.
Yeah.
We need to take better care of our children. And then it's almost like that's the whole message of this movie is watch out for yourself and your kids. Like, watch your kids.
Yeah.
This wouldn't have happened if you'd been watching your children. I mean, that's not true, but like, you can't just, you have to protect them.
Yeah, maybe watch your kids the fuck out the country, go to France, and but don't stay in France.
This is what I'm saying, like,
leave France, because that'll be next.
Pay attention to who's talking to your children.
Pay attention
to who's taking your children, what they're telling your children.
I don't think this particular movie is supposed to be any dig at, well, in some sense, I think maybe, I think Fritz Lang does have some question of law and order, and that may correlate to the growing fascism or the way people might react,
sure,
how they would be reactive to certain things. I think Fritz Lang is trying to assert some kind of logic and reason here. Mm-hmm. I don't know if it's explicitly anti-fascist, as some of his later works definitely would be interpreted that way. Mm-hmm. But it is like an interesting analysis of these kind of societies, the criminal society, the police society, all that kind of rubbed up and affected one another. So
yeah,
there is some kind of social commentary here. May have a lot of questions that lead to greater questions regarding the power that grows.
A lot of questions.
But yeah, that's the movie from 1931, directed by Fritz Lang. It is, to contextually understand the history of it, to understand that a lot of what you're seeing and just had not been done, mm-hmm, had not been so methodical in this way. Mm-hmm. He did set a standard of like what you could do in the growing era of movies at that time.
Yeah.
He just maybe had to leave the country and go to a different country, a country that told him that he can't tell stories about lynching. That's not allowed. So some irony there, you know.
Right.
Now, there's a dog in your lap. So you're going to give this 1 through 5. I'm going to give it 1 through 5 combined for best out of 10. I will go first.
Okay.
4.75.
Okay. 4.5.
That makes it a 9.25. That's an S tier movie. Take a peek here at the S tier list. It earns it. It inspired so much of a lot of crime and noir movies that came later.
Yeah, very influential.
It is a foundational film. It deserves its position. It's right between our current S tier lists of Let the Right One In and Malcolm X, sharing the ranks with other classic noir as Out of the Past and Sunset Boulevard and The Night of the Hunter.
Oh, yeah.
It's at least as good as those movies and helped inspire some of those movies. So, Noir Month, the left-hand endeavor, we will keep on trucking, but we are done for today. So check the show notes for links and other places to find us. Leave a comment, like, subscribe, leave a comment, correction. Fun fact, do you know a lot about Fritz Lang? What's your favorite movie? We haven't discussed Metropolis. That's his other, this and Metropolis are his most infamous. I used to actually rent both of these movies from, our town's public library,
yeah,
in the early 2000s, because that's when I probably saw a lot of classic noir at that time, because when we discovered we could rent VHS from the library back then,
it was like a game changer.
It was like the video, it was like the video store. So yeah, we were watching, I remember watching Metropolis, this, Tin Drum. I think there was a David Lynch movie that got passed around a lot, maybe Blue Velvet.
Mm.
But yeah.
Yeah, I remember that being a big deal when we started dating.
So actually, this movie kind of gives me fond memories of being a young movie viewer watching these things for the first time. But you can find this for free online, and I'll post a link to it, like much of our classic movies.
Yeah,
so
yeah.
I want you to put your nasal into it when you sign us off, like, yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. We will be talking about a James Cagney movie. It'll be the last movie this month.
Yeah, see?